Oh no, Cassie, the truck hit Bailey.
Jeez. I legitimately have been sitting here going, is she breathing? Is she breathing? Because I can't see her like.
I know, she's definitely inflating and deflating at a normal rate.
Yeah. She's alive.
She's running in her dreams.
Shelly's like strolling in her dreams.
Moseying.
Yeah.
Bailey be moseying.
Bailey be mosey.
Bailey's just looking at us and like, do you mind? I am trying to sleep.
She really.
Jesus, Father. Everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Who Is My Doctor?
Who is my doctor?
Who is indeed? I'm your host, Zach, and I know a lot about Doctor Who.
And I'm also your host, Cassie. And I still don't feel like I know a lot about Doctor Who.
Well, that's good. It means we can keep the podcast going.
I know. It's really refreshing and good. Because my brain does the convenient thing where every so often just flushes right out. I was looking at our screen today. Granted, HBO Max doesn't have all of it. Mm-hmm. But as far as we are concerned on this server, mm-hmm. We're like halfway through.
Yeah, we are about halfway through. We're halfway through the original three showrunners runs, if that makes sense. It's a weird thing to say.
Well, because like at least on here, it looks like it goes from 1 to 13.
Yes. And I will say there's been 2 seasons since, so they go up to 15. So we're pretty close to halfway through the new show as it is. Yeah, we're getting pretty close here. We're about to crossing a Rubicon, as it were. Especially because we still don't know if the show's going to get renewed for another season or not.
Hey, you know what? If it doesn't, we can just talk about like. More Land of the Lost.
Farscape. I mean, my original
Sherlock.
My original vision for a show like this before I had decided to show you Doctor Who was to do Star Trek. So,
oh, Jesus H. Christ.
If we wanted to do a show that could literally last forever.
Oh, no!
Yeah, but I thought Doctor Who would be better. Anyway, today we are watching Series 7, Episode 8, The Rings of Akaten, or as my phone decided to autocorrect it to, The Rings of Zach Hates, which is ironic because I love this episode.
Zach, why do you hate this episode? Why does your phone think it?
It's really interesting because this episode is, not everybody loves it, not everybody even likes it. But those that do like it, love it.
It's the, God, what's that one Star Wars movie that is in the same boat?
Oh, The Last Jedi?
Yeah.
Yeah, there are people that fucking love it, and there are people that fucking hate it, and there's very few people in between. And so I'm really curious where you're going to land, because if I'm going to guess, I think you're also going to love it, to be honest with you.
Okay.
Because... I don't want to give too much. I don't want to give too much away, but it gives
spoilers.
There are some moments in it that I think you're going to really that are going to stick with you in a way that I think other episodes don't.
Okay.
Which, if I may, leads me into the first question of the Cassie Profassi today. Which,
for the record, right now, out of 196 guesses, I've gotten 122 correct.
Okay. All right.
Since the last episode was a freaking dud.
Yeah, the last episode was a dud. Let's see if we can make it up a little bit with this episode. This episode, I would personally describe as the Matt Smithiest episode of all.
Flappiest hands.
I was going to say, what do you think I mean by the Matt Smithiest episode?
No, that's not fair.
I will say it's a personal choice, but I think I will also say I've hinted at it for a few other episodes of this podcast. So there should be at least some kind of.
I mean, inkling. I would imagine that would have everything to do with his noodle man tendencies.
He just starts selling cars on the side of the road.
Like that's more what I'm getting at is what answer do you want? Do you want characteristics? Do you want
like, there's something that Matt Smith does that we have remarked on as being like a Matt Smith quality that gets cranked up to 11 this episode.
Is it flappy hands?
It could be flappy hands.
I'm gonna this is the type of question you have engineered specifically to put me in my head, which according to my not therapist because I don't have one of those.
A therapish.
Yeah, it's a therapish. It's my manager at my job.
Who's just very insightful, but otherwise offers no professional credentials.
No. But is something that we've been working on together as a collective to get me out of my own head. You are actively undoing by making me in my own head.
I'm trying to have you run through your mind palace, but for fun reasons. I'm not here trying to make you self-conscious.
No. There's no such thing as roller skating through one's mind palace. Yeah, the first thing that comes to mind is flappy hands. Don't make me go in there. Okay, too
so you
much,
think
Zach.
You think that
mind palace right now is a fucking mess. There are clothes and shoes everywhere. There's so many piles of unread mail, books I haven't read. It's just I don't need to be in there right now. So flappy hands, that's my answer.
So at some point in this episode, the doctor will wave his hand so much that he flies.
No, you said the term flappy hands.
I'm just exaggerating to make a point that his hands get particularly flappy this episode is what we're getting at, really. He becomes a flappy doc.
I don't know. You have literally said, I have it written down on several occasions. Flappy hands. That is a phrase you have coined. If you are saying flap so much he flies, that is your vernacular, word choosing, not mine.
I am not saying that. I am not beholding you to my joke. Like, my joke is just a joke. If you feel that he has particularly flappy hands this episode, I will
like
give you
the
point.
Only other thing I could think of is, oh my God, I can refer to him now. The only thing I could think of is if he is doing other things that are particularly akin to one Christian B. Schmidt, which is a quality I cannot distill and put in my coffee, although I wish I could.
Mm-hmm.
Flappy hands is the only thing.
Okay.
What are some other examples, Zach?
Well, if I start giving you examples, you're going to know that one of them must be the thing.
Okay, but I don't know any other examples.
We've talked about it. I will.
What do you mean? That's the only one I can think of. What else?
I got to sit here and like make sure I have like a proper list of things I can give you. So
well, yeah, because
just give you one thing and you're like, oh, well, that's it then.
Well, just think of like if you say that there is a particular ism I do.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I can't distill. I'm not good at that. I'm good at noticing. I'm not good at identifying.
He does like a lot of like
dramatic. I'm not that kind of autistic.
So some of the things he likes to do, he has a lot of like dramatic flourishes. Like if you think back just a couple episodes ago when he's like introducing Clara to the TARDIS, he has to do like and I flip my hands and all the lights come on and hello, here I am.
Yeah, flappy hand.
There's a lot of like, I'm very much a child right now, where he like skips around and he talks about how bunk beds are so great because they're a bed with a ladder or
so if I were to say he's extra Peter Pan, could
extra
that
Peter
also
Pan, that's one. I've also mentioned that he monologues a lot. He gets really dramatic big actor boy monologues.
This might be a case where there is several answers.
Yeah, there could be something like that.
Can I just say then Peter Pan. He's extra Peter Panny.
Okay. So in some form or fashion, he is extra Peter Panny.
That is an answer true to me. That was an observation I made very early on.
Okay. So that will be, we will figure out a way to adapt that, I suppose. We'll see if it conforms to Cassie's belief that he is extra Peter Panny this episode.
Yeah. Yeah. Did I pick an answer that I can argue? Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's fair. That's the way the Cassie Professor works in a lot of ways.
Make good content.
You get the tea leaves and you decide how to read them. In this case, I will also offer you a much more straightforward Professy question, just in case that last one felt particularly unfair.
I would like to write that, or I would like to notate that in my notes. I've written it down as the Peter Panniest. Anyways, continue.
In the last episode, we saw that Clara has this book of 101 places to see. And inside it, page one is a giant leaf.
No.
Where do you think she got that leaf from, Cassie?
Oh, no.
I will tell you, it was a gift. And was it given to her by a parent, a friend, or an ex-boyfriend?
A friend.
I think it was one of her friends.
An ex.
I think it was an ex.
It was her dad.
It was her dad.
I don't fucking care about a leaf, dude.
It's just the leaf is actually very important this episode. This is the episode where we find out what the leaf's about.
I don't care about the leaf, though. Why would you do this to me?
You don't care about any of the stuff I ask you
no,
about before I ask you about
don't.
It.
No, I don't!
It's kind of the point of the podcast in some ways. Cassie's out here offering a deconstructionist take of the Cassie Professy. And the glasses are off, and the face is in her hands.
I'm trying to rub my eyeballs so I can trigger my vagus nerve and calm down a little bit. An ex-boyfriend.
It was an ex-boyfriend that gives it to her?
Sure.
Okay.
No, it was her dad.
It was her dad?
It was her mom.
Okay, well, we'll just say a parent. We don't have to say mom or dad. We could just say a parent. Because if you say mom and it ends up being dad, that's going to feel cheap. I will let you just say a parent.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's sure. Fair.
All right, so we will... All right, so we will
since
go
she
with,
keeps going into like governess roles, it makes me think that she probably doesn't have parents anymore.
Could be interesting. Yeah,
that means I'm right. Your answer. Okay.
Now you're using your big brain, Cassie. Using that big noodle of yours.
Well, it's because I calm myself down by rubbing my eyeballs for a little bit.
That's how you see the truth, is by rubbing your eyeballs.
Yeah, of course.
All right, well, we will find out together if Matt Smith is particularly Peter Panny this episode, and if Clara got that big old leaf from one of her parents as we watch Series 7, Episode 8, The Rings of Akaten. This episode is brought to you by the Omnivitamin. Feeling tired but can't wake up? Got night sweats and morning chills, sleepy feet but restless legs? Omnivitamin is here to change that. Each tablet is packed with over 7,000% of your daily recommended intake of vitamins A through Z, including letters the FDA hasn't even approved yet. Vitamin Q, vitamin 9, even 3 vitamin in a baby. Don't Google it. It's definitely real. And while most multivitamins focus on boring, common health concerns, Omnivitamin goes much further. Much, much further. It helps protect against sudden elbow inflation, reverse lactose intolerance, loose foot syndrome, and of course, banana hands. But that's not all. Omnivitamin also includes trace amounts of minerals sourced directly from asteroids, I think, giving you the raw cosmic energy your cells crave, but definitely don't understand. Omnivitamin is gluten-free, guilt-free, and oxen-free. Just one pill a day and you'll never have to worry about scurvy, ennui, or lunar-induced joint misalignment ever again. So go ahead, swallow the rainbow, cure the future. Omnivitamin. It's health. Probably. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA, the FBI, the CIA, the IRS, the Jedi Council, or your mom. Omnivitamin is not intended to diagnose, treat, or summon anything. Do not take if allergic to purple. And we are back from the Rings of Akaten. So, what'd you think, Cassie?
I feel like the number of times I have started an episode going,
I mean, I would personally give it an Akaten out of 10.
Anyways.
But genuinely, what did you think? Because I've told you that a lot of people this is a really divisive episode for a lot of people. I am personally I love this episode column of this, but I'm curious if you land on the positive or negative side of it.
I think it's fine.
You think it's fine?
I'm one of the rare. I feel like that's me skirting through being a fucking contrarian like I always am. I thought it was perfectly fine.
Yeah.
I'm not sitting here saying I am absolutely flabbergasted and so very in love.
Yeah, no, it's not Blink. It definitely is not.
No.
It's definitely not Blink, and it's definitely not Vincent and the Doctor, but it is. But there's a lot in it that I think only. It's another one of those where it's like only Doctor Who can do this kind of story.
Now, only Doctor Who can give me flashbacks to being in church
and make you not anxious about it.
No, I'm still anxious about it.
Yeah, there is definitely, especially because they keep referring to it as an old god. So there's very almost like, what if Catholics worshipped a Lovecraftian eldritch being?
What if they actually got Jesus out of the cave? And then that's what we've been worshipping this whole time.
You're like, yeah, up on the cross of any given church is just you, the ashes of an actual Jesus.
You joke. So when I was growing up,
mm-hmm.
the church that I went to that was like our church, I will not say its name, but has this massive crucifix that's made out of like hundreds of little like mosaic tiles, but then on hanging off of it is a carved Jesus.
And so like you as a child are like, he's got to come down.
Yeah. And then there was another church we went to somewhere in Arizona that had a very like interpretive Jesus. Like it had a very interpretive crucifix, but it had a chandelier made of bones and then and like antlers because Arizona.
I don't think that justifies that at all.
In the wall, in the section that we were sitting in, coming through the plaster was like a Jesus face and hand.
I was just about to say, like, is it like a hunting trophy where instead of like a deer's head, it was just Jesus's head mounted on the wall?
No, it was worse. It was like a spirit coming through the wall as if it were as if it were a veil.
There's like a realistic human head wearing a crown of thorns going, ah.
You fucking jest. But it was a light. It wasn't like, oh, it's like really big, interpretive. Like it's taking up the whole wall. It just looks like a guy. It legitimately looks like, you know, in HHN when they have the veils, like the very thin scrim where like the actors, the characters can put their hands and like faces up to it. And like that impression is left. That's what it was in the church. I don't know if I'm communicating to you just how fucking scary this church was.
Like, you know when you have those little like those toys that are like just full of like 100 little plastic pens and you could push your hands through it. You could see like your hand through the plastic pens.
Yeah.
I'm picturing that, but with a whole person.
Yes. And it's supposed to be Jesus coming through the wall. With a bone chandelier.
That sounds to me like Jesus trying to be the Holy Ghost and failing.
Zach, I'm not sure this was a 100% Catholic church. I think this was a multi-religious.
You found a necromancer church. I think that's what you went into. Yeah. The bone chandelier and ghosts coming through the wall. That sounds like a necromancer.
Yep.
You went to worship a lich.
If you told me that Jesus Christ was a lich, I would absolutely believe you.
Jesus Christ, super lich.
Hey, there's a reason I stopped going to church.
But yeah, I really like this episode. I acknowledge that it's not like high art in any capacity, but there's a lot in it that it's just like it's. I had mentioned that I enjoy it last episode, and you had called it comfort food, and that is what I feel like. This is a comfort food where I just need to like feel something for 45 minutes. You know what I mean?
No, I don't, just because I did not share in that feeling whatsoever.
I'm sure you have something where you're just like, I just need to feel something for a little bit. Even if it's not something new. I acknowledge that it's not like speaking to the higher consciousness of humanity, but it does make me feel something.
I mean, yes, but the things that I reserve for, I just need to feel something, are moments in film and in books where I go like, I just need to feel something. Yeah.
I forget nothing makes you cry.
No, I'm stoic.
a hard heart that, Cassie.
Yeah. Nothing makes you feel anything unless it has to do with somebody's fucking dad.
Yeah, if it had been Clara's dad that died, you would have a wildly different opinion now. But I like that there's a lot of like little allusions to like other big sci-fi, and it sort of like lets it congeal into one moment. Like the bazaar very clearly feels like Mos Eisley and Tatooine.
Oh, I loved the bazaar.
Yeah.
The only note I wrote was, oh my God, so many species.
According to Matt Smith, there were like somewhere between 50 and 60 different actors wearing prosthetic suits.
That's in fucking incredible. Right? And each one was unique.
Right. I mean, there were a few where it's like there are three of this one, but there are still dozens of species walking around.
That's fine. You walk into any metropolitan city, you're not going to see, and there's a black man, and there's an Asian woman, and there's an Indian person. You're not going to have that, you know, having like, oh, well, there are three of the same species of alien that are all like clustered and.
And I will say my favorite part of going to Los Angeles is finding the lizard dog person selling me mopeds in exchange for my memories.
Yep. I would love that.
Especially because the doctor's way of like communicating with her is to come up and like scratch under its chin.
It gives me the same thought of like, because Clara tries to like speak to her in her bark language.
Yeah.
I can't help but think, like, what is she actually saying? Very similar to, like, when the cats are meowing and you meow back.
Meanwhile, what you don't know is you're just going, fuck, fuck, fuck.
Well, yeah, because Bailey's also going, fuck, fuck, fuck.
Food, fuck.
I forget that in the meowing, food and fuck sound very similar. We did skip over what I wrote down as Leaf monologue, so Tumblr.
Which you talk about the...
This specific leaf had to grow on this specific branch, oh, yeah. Be blown off by this specific wind, so that way it can hit this specific man.
In the face to meet this specific girl. It's the most important leaf in human history. I will say, though, I feel like if you're at a certain point in a relationship, that kind of monologue will absolutely nail that relationship down.
I don't know.
I'm not saying for you, but I'm saying for certain people. Also, I'm saying it for you, but I'm also saying for certain people.
Hey, no.
If you just wax poetic for like a solid minute in a way that most men are not emotionally privy to doing.
Nah, you got to work much harder than that. You got to propose at least 6 times
on the first date. You have this moment where you do get a Cassie for Fassie point because it was given to her by her parents.
Good.
And it's sort of unclear which parent gave it to her. But it is a leaf given to her from her parents because it was the leaf that let her parents meet. Which I think is just, I think it's cute. Definitely a little Tumblr-y for the monologue, absolutely. But I do think it's, you know, it's a cute, like, I knew the moment I looked at this person, I was going to love them for the rest of my life. And so I'm going to hold on to this leaf. What's really miraculous is how that leaf has stayed intact for so long.
I know.
Because Clara's like 20 something now.
You know what?
That leaf's lasted. That leaf has been dead for 25 years.
Flexible. All right. It's not the fact, because I have like, you can press leaves and flowers and stuff, but those bitches get dry and mm-hmm. brittle. Mm-hmm. That one still had some flexibility.
Still had some flavor.
I don't like how sneaky the doctor is, like, going back in time specifically to observe baby Clara. Mm-hmm.
To be fair, he doesn't, like, go after and, like, sneak up on every person. He's specifically trying to figure out how there can be 3 Claras.
Yeah.
How is there Oswin? How is there Clara Oswin?
Well, because he does say she's not possible. So there, I know that it's not a like, ew, the doctor's being a fucking creep. He's being a, and there's 2 different P words that could fit there. Choose your favorite. I don't know. Because like jumping to the end of the episode, it's the specificity of her going, oh, you were there. Why were you there? And the doctor not answering like, buddy, you owe her. You can tell her you're just as confused as she is.
I mean, he does tell her that she reminds him of someone that died. He doesn't specifically say someone who is definitely you because they have your same face and tastes and name.
And all 3 of your names.
Your first name, your last name, and your online username.
What would your reaction be if somebody was like, hey, so I don't know how to tell you this, but you have existed before and will exist again.
I think it would depend on how serious they were being, because I feel like I've been told plenty of people tell me about reincarnation and stuff, and I don't necessarily believe them. But if someone was like, no, here's a picture, then I might be a little hang on. It probably would make me wrestle with my own mortality a little bit, or at least because I'm so like, I have such a strong opinion about that nothing happens after we die.
Yeah.
That having some sort of tangible proof that something does happen might rattle me a little bit, actually, now that I'm thinking about it out loud. Or I'd be like, yeah, the doctor not only like comes up to her when she's like, not only up to Clara's parents, but then up to her when like Clara's a little girl in the park. And then another time when Clara's at her mom's grave, like recently after her death.
Like, it's obsessive in a way that I don't feel like is very doctor-y.
Mm-hmm. But also at the same time, there is a part of it, which is like, if the doctor doesn't know how something works, like if he can't explain it, I totally believe that he would be like, I have to figure out how did this happen? Like, how is this? So the doctor calls, likes to call Clara the impossible girl. That will come up on that a little bit more.
Which is really ironic because I just finished reading a book where one girl also refers to the other as the impossible girl.
And much so, like how I sometimes will be like, she is impossible.
Talking about Bailey?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Impossible to please. And then the doctor picks her up. He asks her where she wants to go because she's got her book of 101 places to see. Pick somewhere, anywhere you'd like to go. And she immediately can't think of anywhere.
Relatable.
Yeah. And the, you know, the specifically, it was the line of like, you know, when someone asks you what your favorite book is and you immediately forget every book you've ever read. I felt that pretty hard.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I had to answer the question today of if somebody would play you in a movie, who would they be and why? And I immediately went, I have never seen any actors
do anything. What's acting?
No.
What's a movie? Who is me? I don't understand who me is.
Comedy? Never heard of it.
Is that a food?
Is that a place? Do I need a passport to get there?
She eventually decides that she wants to go, quote, she wants to see, quote, something awesome. Super helpful, Clara. That narrows it down quite a bit across the whole of space and time.
I mean,
I do like that. That's basically just the I'm not ordering you order at dinner.
That is the equivalent of being like, hey, what movie do you watch or what movie do you want to watch? I don't care.
You decide.
Yeah, I don't know.
The good news is the doctor does not have executive dysfunction and, in fact, can make hard decisions. And so he takes them to Akaten, which is a large star with two rings orbiting around it. One
that had more rings.
Well, two prominent rings. One has this bazaar on it and one has the pyramid on it.
Also, in case this does come up in the recordings at some point, which it absolutely will, Bailey has moved from the floor onto the couch and now is leaving the couch, meaning that any comment I was about to make of hearing any meows is now void. Moving on.
And so he shows her this wonderful place where there's like, oh, look at this alien bazaar, and then counts down from five and then you see this great golden pyramid off in the distance. And they're like, all right, now let's go there and have a story.
Like, I do like that.
There is something very, like, almost classic sci-fi about it, like a very 50s,
oh,
like,
yeah.
Look at the planet we're about to go down. We're going to go land there and have an adventure.
Yep.
Very,
It was like reminding me Buck very Rogers much kind of thing. Like, it had the same beats as retro television.
Yeah.
Which I really greatly appreciate.
Mm-hmm. Right down to how many guys were in suits.
Oh, my God. There's so many. They were so pretty and well done.
Mm-hmm. And, like, in vibrant colors, and they're really, like, interesting designs. That's another thing is I just really appreciate just, like, the creativity shown for all these different creatures. Because some of them are, like, creatures from the show. Some of them were unique for this episode, but there's an alien creature that you're actually going to meet, I think, next episode, who are the Martians. And one of them was in this episode, just not wearing their usual suit of armor. Hmm. So you'll meet the Martians next episode.
Cool.
Yeah. The doctor takes her through the bazaar, shows her all these things. And eventually Clara runs into this little girl in like a flowing robe and a little little markings on her face.
Yeah. Liquid latex markings. It was either liquid latex or there's a paste that you can, it comes in two parts.
Mm-hmm.
I'm forgetting what it's called, but effectively it's like a silicone putty that you can very quickly mold and then just like peel it off when you're done. It's scar wax, not scar wax. It's something similar to it. Doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
It was just so very clearly a makeup thing.
Yeah. Well, and
I know it's, you're not going to be doing it. We're not going to make people get thing implements in their face for a show.
Yeah, especially but when it's a child.
It's the specificity of those markings not having any distinct color variation.
Mm-hmm.
They're just very matte. I pay attention to that, so that became a distractor for me for the rest of the episode.
I think it's especially like distracting when you see all of like the intricate latex suits that everyone's in. That when you just get some girl who's just got like, we're gonna give her cat whisker scars, and if you're just like, I mean, I guess it's fine,
because it's also not,
I do like, love like the robes they're wearing though. They're like a beautifully intricate outfit.
Yeah, lightweight fucking fabrics that just look really cool when you run, but are such a bitch to work with. But they look so nice. You just have to deal with it because they look so nice. I have beef with fabric.
The little girl's running away and Clara eventually runs after her, but the little girl gets chased down by three what's the pinhead looking motherfuckers?
Scary ass bounty hunters. Yeah, that's what I wrote.
Yeah, the Vigil is what they're called. Who are meant to feed the little girl to grandfather, the mummy living in the pyramid. And they talk like this.
Mary. And they all move their head in synchronicity too.
Yeah, and those are really creepy. And the fact that
there were three and they were all synchronized.
Yeah, it's really, really eerie. I like them quite a lot. They don't do a whole lot, but they're just very effective scene setters.
Well, because they're scary and they're wearing, or they're dark.
And they'll have like these Darth Vader things over their mouth.
Perfectly round eyes. Their robes are also made out of like a jacquard, something that was like a very heavyweight fabric, as opposed to the Queen of Time and all of her people that were wearing that very like lightweight flowy. Mm-hmm. They were very dense and heavy.
Mm-hmm. And so they managed to get the little girl away and they run to the TARDIS, but the TARDIS won't let Clara in.
I thought the TARDIS needed a key.
The TARDIS does need a key, but also the TARDIS is a sentient being. It can open its door if it wants to.
Do we find out why the TARDIS then doesn't like Clara?
We do, but they do also play a little bit with that. Without spoiling too much, I will say the reason the TARDIS doesn't like Clara is the same reason she is impossible. Because the fact that she keeps sprouting up through time. So we'll find out a little bit more about that as the season goes on. But yeah, I do like that the TARDIS is just like, no, you can't come in. I don't like you. Stay out of my me.
Stay out of my me. I will say, so I will argue this point in a little bit. There were some other very like fairy tale isms, specifically the fact that Mary Galil, the Queen of Years, had to sing a song and she was running away and didn't want to. Mm-hmm. Do you know who else was forced to sing a song in front of all of her elders and so strongly didn't want to, so she ran away?
Who is that?
Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah, there's a lot of allusions to other things in this episode. Yeah,
I think even the Doctor says something that is explicitly from Alice in Wonderland.
I wouldn't be surprised. I can't think of it off the top of my head, but I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah.
So you guessed the wrong Disney movie is what you're saying. You'd said Peter Pan when really he's more White Rabbit.
He's still very Peter Paniest, but I'm going to argue that point.
Okay. Well, Clara takes a little girl around the backside of the TARDIS and she can't get in. And so they sit down and Clara is like, I think that you're going to be able to sing the song just fine because you're not going to be that scared. I think you're going to nail it. And the little girl's like, all right, well, the stranger believes in me. That means I can do it.
I mean, that's sometimes all it takes for me to do anything. I literally, it took not 15 seconds for me to go from, I don't know if I'm going to spend this much money on a swimsuit, to then one very, very particular person in the same room as me to go, I think that's a cute swimsuit on you, for me to go, okay, I'm going to get it.
I had a very similar situation at work where someone was like, I just need to enroll in health insurance for the first time and I'm a little intimidated to do it. And I was like, well, if you want help, I've helped people enroll in it before. I can help walk you through it. And she went, okay, well, thank you. I'll think about it. And she came back like 10 minutes later. She's like, all right, I did it all already. And I'm like, why did you need so much help?
Sometimes it just takes somebody to believe in you.
That was exactly what she said. She was just like, it was just knowing that you could do it made me convince me that I could also do it. And I went, thank you. You know that you, a big dummy, are able of accomplishing this means that me, a big smarty, should definitely be able to.
Yeah.
Thank you for that. I think. Glad I could help. Yeah. So she believes, and they run down to the pews in church.
Yeah, to the church stadium.
Where the Doctor and Clara have to make the worst move anybody ever has to, which is to get through a crowd that has already formed to sit down and just like take a seat, a really good seat at that. They don't have to take one at the end. They take one near the center like a couple of assholes.
Yep.
And they shove people off to the side. They sit in their seats and the doctor is loudly talking over the scene saying, hey, yeah, so she's singing to the old god, sometimes called grandfather, in the pyramid. And that keeps them sleeping. And then she misses a note.
The way, though, that I also, in that particular context, if you had to get up in front of a congregation and sing a song and missed a note. Oh, my God.
To keep an old god asleep, lest he eat all of your souls.
I don't blame her, too. I would also be running away.
Yeah, like, that's scary. It's a lot of pressure to put on a child. I don't care what she's the queen of.
Do you think she was that little girl actually singing?
I believe so.
I think so.
Funny thing about her, she has since gone on to be nominated for an Oscar.
Good for her.
In the movie Coda. Her name is Amelia Jacobs.
Hold for pronunciation.
Sorry, Amelia Jones. Her name is Amelia Jones, and she is a prominent actress in the movie Coda, which I believe stands for Child of Deaf Adults. And she is
not the little brother in Brother Bear.
No. No, she was not in Brother Bear. She is not a musical term. She is the Child of Deaf Adults, and that is also the character that she plays. She is a Child of Deaf Adults, and she got nominated for an Oscar for that movie.
When did she get nominated?
This is 2014.
Okay, I thought you meant recently. I went, is she still a child?
I mean,
she like that one fucker from Game of Thrones who just doesn't age?
I mean, she was born in 2002, so she's only 23 right now. Sorry, I was wrong. She was nominated in 2021, so she was only 19 when that movie came out.
Oh, okay, that's cool. Makes me feel really good and powerful.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm just over here turning to dust.
Yeah, don't worry. I just got my first big girl job, and I am...
We're all very excited for you. Everyone who's listening right now, clap for Cassie. She deserves it.
Yeah, I am realizing. So fun fact, we're going to deviate and take a little break to talk about me for a second. A little life
Cassie's
update.
Favorite subject on the podcast. Yep.
Well, because I also realized like, oh, yeah, I'm going to be talking way more about the costumes because that's literally going to be my job.
Mm-hmm.
Is talking about costumes.
Less talk about coffee, more talk about costumes.
Yeah.
We haven't moved that far down the alphabet, but
no. But this time I'll be working with other prolific adults trying to make children's.
Maybe you could put scar gel on someone's face in cat whisker formation.
Oh, I absolutely will at some point. I can guarantee you.
But yes, Cassie has her first big girl job, the job she went to college for. So we're all very happy for her. So I hope everyone listening to this is very excited for her. Anyway.
And if not, you keep that shit to yourself, okay?
So after that, we get into, I think, the real meat of the episode where they're having to save this little girl by renting a moped using Clara's mom's ring because it's sentimental. Because this entire culture functions off of psychometry, which is the thing that you hold a lot of psychic love for. I really like
As a hoarder, oh, God, me giving you something of great value to me.
I do really like the line where the doctors, where they first bring up the mopeds, where the doctor's like, oh, you don't give them money, you give them something valuable. I'm like, you're right, doctor, money isn't valuable.
Could you imagine something being like, no, I need to take that. And they point to like your watch.
Mm-hmm.
You don't wear a lot of valuable things on. You don't value anything.
I harbor no strong feelings towards anything in my heart. I am a cold, empty
lifeless
being. Yeah. That's the real truth. If someone was like, you will only get this if you can give me something valuable, I'd have to hand in one of my Doctor Who Blu-rays.
You would have to.
Probably whatever season we haven't gotten to yet, just to be like, here you go. I'm like, fuck.
Never mind the paintings I've made you and the.
I'm trying to be topical, Cassie. I'm trying to be topical.
Yeah, okay. Jerk. Gonna have to hand them the remote to the Fire Stick. No, we can't watch TV on that one.
I should have to hand them you.
No.
Here you go. I keep a lot of very valuable memories for me. And now, could I have that sweet moped?
And she, on her person, has a lot of things that are super valuable and memorable.
She does. She's brought, like, all of her, like, memories of her mother on her person. She's wearing, like, 5 rings. She's got her book of 101 places to see with the leaflet.
I thought you were still talking about me. I went, yeah, I have my grandma's ring.
I heard talking about Clara.
I've got commemorative tattoos.
I was talking about Clara. I'm sorry. And yeah, no, Clara's wearing like multiple rings. She's got her book of 101 places to see with the leaf in it. She's got all kinds of like memorabilia of her mother on her. This is like the worst place she could be unless she's really in the mood to do some business.
Yeah, unless she's really in the mood to save a little girl.
Which she is in this moment. So she hands over her mom's ring and hops on the moped and they chase down the little girl while she's being psychic bubbled down towards the pyramid. This show is stupid to say out loud.
Yep. That's why I'm letting you do 90% of the talking right now.
And they get into the pyramid and you see this ugly ass mummy. Just, oof, what a mummy.
How ugly was it?
It just looked like a shriveled, like, how do I, like, you know, it looks like a bishop in chess was made out of raisins. That's the best way I can put it. His head had the shape of a bishop, but then he was just like all, you know what he looked like? You remember that episode of SpongeBob where they're selling chocolate bars and they reel out.
What did you say?
Yeah, they reel out that woman. That's who he looks like. He looks like.
But with limbs.
Yeah, looks like that with arms.
Can I say something? I know that it's all makeup.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like how fresh and juicy the inside of his mouth was because that's literally just the actor's mouth.
Well, he's hungry.
But it's the fact that like they did put in like a pair of dentures or something to like fuck up his teeth. Mm-hmm. But his tongue is still like plump and pink. Like just dye it black or something.
Yeah. I mean, the one that really got me was his fingers are not super flexible. So there's a few times where he's like banging on the glass, but his hands are just like splaying out.
Well, that's fine.
They very clearly like that's soft fine. And squishy.
If your mummy rigor mortis hasn't weared off yet, that makes sense. It for me, truly, it was just how like vibrant his tongue was.
Yeah, and then the vigil shows up to feed Mary to the mummy. And the doctor's response is just to point his screwdriver at them really hard.
Yeah, and to have a Harry Potter-esque magic battle.
I'm pointing my screwdriver as hard as I can.
Green v. blue. We didn't even mention how powerful their breath is or how that one other guy, the singer, just fucks right off.
he's just like, you mean to tell me that if I leave right now, the song ends with me? I get to go down in history as the last person who sings the song? Ugh, what a fucking diva.
Then he just uses his little bracelet and gets right out of there.
What a beautiful voice that man had, though.
Right?
Like, I think he was I think it's called a contratenor, which is where your mm-hmm. voice, you're beyond tenor. You basically have a woman's vocal range. I've only ever seen one in person. When I was in college and I was studying music, there was one singer who had an actual contratenor voice. And it was genuinely beautiful to hear him sing in person.
Wow.
So I'm hoping that was that guy's actual voice. I don't know why you would not cast him.
I don't know why you wouldn't cast somebody who could sing.
Yeah, for a part that is 95% singing.
It is only just, singing a song that doesn't stop.
Yeah, and then his other function is being, fuck this shit, I'm out.
To be the only person to sing who doesn't stop, and the lyrics for the song aren't, this is the song that doesn't end.
Yeah, for that you would have to hire Charlie Horse.
Yes, it goes on and on, my fans.
Or alternatively, Lamb Chop.
Some people started singing it, not knowing what it was. And they'll continue singing it forever just because this is a song that doesn't end. When I made my ADHD loop, sometimes that does come into my zeitgeist. You're welcome, everybody, for having that stuck in your head for the rest of your day.
Mm-hmm.
That will get stuck in my ADHD tracks.
Mm-hmm.
But then what I'll end up doing is every verse, I sing it in a different voice. It's very fun. Highly recommend.
See, I can't hear that song without hearing. I'm blanking on the woman's name who the puppeteer for Lamb Chop. But when they do it in the show in Lamb Chop's Playhouse, I think is what it was called. At the end, as they're all like singing it and trotting off down the street, finally Charlie Horse pops up like behind a tree and keeps singing it, and her response is just to like hold his mouth shut
with her mouth.
Yeah, with her hand
mouth.
It's like, Charlie Horse, you stop it. And so they eventually the vigil run away because the grandfather has woken up officially, which means that the doctor finds out that grandfather was not, in fact, the old god. Grandfather was the alarm clock for the old god.
And the old god was just the entity that chases you in the in the Space Mount Overlay Ghost Galaxy.
Yeah, that's exactly what that looks like. That exactly looks like the Ghost Nebula in Ghost Galaxy. Oh, my God.
That was all I could think of.
I even wrote that down. It is kind of silly that they're like, look upon this old god who feeds upon souls. And you're like, oh, the sun's got a face.
Oh, the sun. Oh, look, tourists.
And I like that it just because it's got like just black spots for its eyes and mouth. So really all it can do is like, hey, 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 or, no,
it's just a comedy tragedy mask.
It's all it can do. Yep. It's the only emotions it can read. I do love it, though. I will admit, I do just there's a part of it's just a sucker for it. Like, it's just a fun design to see the sun be happy and sad. And then Clara takes the little girl back to her little pedestal where she finally musters up the courage to sing her song again.
Cherry ripe, cherry ripe. There might be one person that can understand, because you've never seen that version of.
I don't even know what we're talking about.
Yep. One person got it.
I'm very happy for them. And so she starts singing her song, and that inspires the doctor to monologue. The monologuiest monologue he has ever monologued.
Mm-hmm. I imagine that's the answer you were looking
yes,
for.
Yes, I was looking for the Matt Smithiest being that this episode is seemingly built entirely around letting him monologue literally to a wall.
Actually, it's to a sun with
that's
a
the thing
face.
Is, yes, we see it as a sun, but there wasn't no sun there when they were filming it. That was a green screen that they let him talk to. And Matt Smith is like, all right, challenge accepted, as he wiggles his little bow tie. And I
cried like a baby.
I did, in fact, cry like a little baby. And honestly, there's a part like it's.
Yeah. Would you like to elaborate why you find that so emotional?
So there's a lot to it. The part that first gets me is really near the very beginning, where he says, like, do you hear all the people that have devoted themselves and sacrificed themselves to you? do you hear them singing? And there's a part of it where it really is just like, hey, this thing that your entire existence is built around, go fuck yourself. Something about a choir like that is so, like, undeniable. Like, you can't be like, they're not doing anything. They're just singing. That's all they're doing. And like, no, they're definitively trying to put you back to sleep, motherfucker. This is one of those moments where you're like, oh, Matt Smith is really good at playing this character being 1,000 years old.
Yes.
As he just describes everything he knows. It's
well, because on the surface, he just kind of looks like
he's a 20 something year old guy.
Yeah, he just looks like a boy who refused to grow up.
Yeah, he's like 29 or 30 in this moment.
Mm-hmm.
And he's talking about how he was there. He was there at the beginning of the universe, and he watched the universe burn as stars went out. Until there was no time, no space, just me. And there's a part of it where it's like, you could, like, there's a part where something about the way he says that makes it sound like I've had really bad depression moments. And one of the ways I dealt with it was by literally going to the end of time. Bailey agrees.
Yeah. If the audio picks that up.
I will say in the original draft of the script, that monologue is supposed to be what defeats the god.
Yeah.
And there's a part of it where it's like, oh, you can kind of tell like someone spent time crafting a monologue specifically for a 1,000-year-old being that has traveled through all of space and time,
who was responsible for his own species demise.
Yeah. Who is equally responsible for both saving and dooming entire species, who has whittled himself to being down to the last of his own kind. And then there's a part where he's like, especially at the end, where he's like, come on, then take it on. I'm like, I like it. I like what he's doing. Good acting.
You weren't so happy and jolly during that.
I was not so happy and jolly during that. I did. I think I mentioned a few episodes ago that when I briefly considered being an actor, one of the monologues I had practiced
was that one.
Was in fact that one.
Jeez.
I never did it for anyone, but I certainly think it would work. It's a good monologue that covers a lot of emotions.
Yeah.
And Matt Smith does a good job. I really like, there's a beat in it where he starts, you could see one tear rolling out of his eye.
That was the moment for me that I went, okay, good. Because at least for me, tear is synonymous with then like voice starting to quake and waver.
Mm-hmm.
And his simply didn't.
Yeah.
His eyes and his mouth were doing two very different things. They were telling the same story, but they were not in communion with each other.
Yeah. And it's a really impressive skill that I don't know how he did.
Did you know? Hey, so I've been on an American Psycho kick for the past couple of days.
It turns out Matt Smith might be a psychopath.
Well, no. American Psycho. Specifically, Christian Bale. Anytime that Patrick Bateman would be like profusely sweating, that's just something he can do. Did you fucking know that?
That explains how he could just like spontaneously lose like 200 pounds to be a really skinny
yes.
guy.
Yes. He's like one of the most like skilled actors of our time. You tell him to do something, he says, great, give me like 5 minutes. I'll figure it out. So it's a skill. All I'm saying is that Matt Smith and Christian Bale might be waterbenders.
Specifically the water in their own body.
Yes.
Yeah. Matt Smith manages to like let loose tears, but also just like get louder and there's more bite to him. And I'm like, this is fucking acting. Like, I don't know how else to describe it. Like, there's some part of it where I'm just like, I like watching. I like that someone wrote something seemingly just for him.
It's the same thing that you are dealing with right now, trying to identify the factors that make Matt Smith a good actor.
Mm-hmm.
And me trying to distill what makes him, what are his Matt Smithisms? Sometimes you just know, you know.
Yeah, I have. I don't know if it's because we've been doing the podcast or if I'm just like more aware of it because we're doing the podcast. I have caught myself at work whenever I'm like walking around explaining things that I will do the little hand gesture that he does where he's like rubbing his hands together. And I'm like hunched over a little bit, like this very like nervous, nutty professor kind of move that he does. Mm-hmm. Absent-minded professor move that he's doing.
I mean, I learned at a very young age that when Julie Andrews gets nervous, mm-hmm. she would like flick her fingers out. So like keep all of them under her thumb and then like flick them out. And that's like how she expels some of her like nervous anxiety. And then I started doing that because I went, oh, if Julie Andrews does it, that must help. And now if you look and watch, like when I'm anxious or I'm trying to like let something out,
mm-hmm.
Same thing.
I mean, it's better than you like kicking your feet around, but that's less dangerous.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's not that I'm nervous. It's specifically when I start explaining something.
Well, yeah, that's you channeling that energy.
Yeah, I guess so. And it was just funny. I caught myself doing it like, I think a half dozen times or so now at work just over the last couple of months. And I've been like, I don't know if this is because we're watching Doctor Who or because I've seen so much of Matt Smith playing Doctor Who that now it has bled into my life and I'm only becoming aware of it because we're watching it for the podcast.
Like, is this something you started doing before or after?
Exactly.
You'll never know.
There's not enough video of me in the past to know for sure. The Doctor's 1,000-year-old memories. Memories of...
Does he get to keep those at all, or is he just...
Yeah, he keeps them.
Okay.
He gets to keep the secrets that must never be spoken, knowledge that must never be shared.
His name.
Yeah, his own name. It all feeds off into the sun, and the sun starts to implode until suddenly it's like, wait a second. I am still hungry, actually.
And that's the exact second the episode lost me.
Which is funny because apparently, again, the monologue was supposed to be what originally killed the old god. But Stephen Moffat went, the Doctor has made monologues like this before. That can't be what saves the day. And I really think it should be Clara in some way. And so the way they came up with it is that she comes down with the leaf that was her mom's and feeds it to him. And it's... The Doctor's point is like, oh, yeah, you like everything I gave you was, there's certainly a lot of me, but there's an infinity of stuff that that could have been, which I'm of two minds on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that you and I are in the same place, because when I first watched it, I also thought that sounded really fucking stupid.
It's something, I'm not sitting here saying it's stupid. Don't you dare put words in my mouth.
I was picking up where you were going, but if I'm incorrect, please correct me.
I don't think it's stupid.
Okay.
I do think that it's a little like, let's make sure that all the actors get to have their good moments. This is community children's theater. We all need to make sure that we're being fair and that nobody's hogging the spotlight.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's what it felt like. I don't disagree with the fact that the thing that should do the thing that we want to have happen in the episode should not always belong to the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
I do agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is not entertaining to watch.
Yeah.
Is somebody consistently succeed and everybody else be players in the background.
Mm-hmm.
However, I am torn on it because there's a part of me that's like, yeah, just let the doctor have his big fucking monologue. Let him just, it worked. That's what took out the sun.
Snuff out the light.
Because I'm wondering how effective it would have been if we just saw the sun's light dim significantly,
mm-hmm.
but not
cave in on itself like it was doing. Yeah.
Where it was like the doctor realizes in that moment, oh, fuck, this is not enough.
Mm-hmm.
If the doctor himself had the realization of, oh, shit, this wasn't enough, I don't know what to do now.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's when Deus Ex Clarinaw comes through and... And then says, here's my magic parent leaf. Here's my daddy leaf, the most important leaf in human history. Then maybe it wouldn't have been. It's that slight discrepancy. Because I do like Clara then reflecting to herself that the doctor says, we don't walk away.
Mm-hmm.
Because the doctor has now said on several occasions, we do not walk away. But that he is constantly running away. So the doctor is one of contradictions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like a really lovable red-headed boy that refused to grow up. All I'm saying.
And then when they fought pirates for that one scene, it was really very clear.
All I'm saying is I don't think I'm wrong. Still, I should get another point. Everybody clap your hands if you want Cassie to get a point. Hey, I do believe in Cassie. I do.
Tell you what, if I get three comments from different people saying I do believe in Cassie, I will give you a point.
Everybody, please. I will comment myself as well.
You're not going to join Blue Sky just to clap for yourself. Immediately pulls out her phone.
I just want to show you something. What does this look like, bitch? What does this look like, bitch, on my phone this whole time?
I had no idea you had Blue Sky.
Do have Blue Sky.
I feel really embarrassed that I don't follow you on Blue Sky now because I didn't know that you had Blue Sky.
It's been a secret.
It's kind of funny. So when I first watched the episode, I did also think that, like, the concept of, like, here's all the days that she should have had and never had. The doctor's like, well, there's an infinity of those, right? And it just kind of works.
It does kind of feel like when you and your cousin are trying to convince your mom and aunt that you should have a sleepover. And then the one is like, and we both have soccer in the morning.
And so originally that was a huge hang up I always had with it. And then one day it just kind of clicked with me.
What clicked with you?
I don't think it's literally like all of the days that she could have had or what's being fed to him. It's not like this infinite, like span of possibility, because that doesn't even really make a lot of sense in context of the old god.
No,
because what they've established is it's like sentimental meaning, like the things that matter to you. And so I think it's far more likely to interpret it as he is feeding on all the different things Clara has imagined her mom could be had she been able to live. And there might literally be an infinite of those. It's not, she's not, he's not literally feeding on an infinite web of possibilities. He is feeding on all the ways that her mom meant to her and all the ways she saw what she could have been. And specifically because one of the things they go back to is no matter where you go, I will find you. So to Clara, there is and now, especially now that she's in the TARDIS, she can literally go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that like possibility of her mind, where her mom could be has just expanded to the whole of time and space.
Well, especially her sacrificing this leaf that is by extension her mom. It is a symbol of her mother.
Mm-hmm.
That is also still her mother helping her.
Yeah.
And finding her.
Yeah. And so there's a part of it where at first I didn't like it, but then I came to that realization where it's like, he's not feeding off of the mom, this character that's not really present. He's feeding off of Clara. And when I had sort of like wrapped my head around what that meant, what the implications were of that, I felt much better about that being the ending of the story. Cause I do agree you can have an infinite number of ideas of who someone could be.
Mm-hmm.
And in that case, I agree with the episode and I liked it more. I liked it even more when I came to that conclusion. I'm a big fan of it. And then, yes, as you said, they hop on board back to the TARDIS and go back to the Maitland house so Clara can continue being the governess for these two children. I do like that there seems to be a trend this season specifically of the Doctor like dropping off his companion rather than keeping them with them all the time.
Yeah.
Something seems to have changed with the end of last season where he dropped the pawns off at their home.
Do you think it's this time around, it's because he doesn't want the companions to be glued at the hip?
Yeah, I think it very well could be that there's very much like
he's already lost companions in the past, having to watch them explode on a ship.
still settling with Adric a little bit.
Yes!
Didn't realize I had traumatized you.
Specifically people dying in horrible airborne crashes that just really stick with me.
One of my favorite comments that we got was actually from one of our patrons that said, what killed the dinosaurs? The ice, Adric. So mean. Anyway, so they hop back on board the TARDIS and they fly back to the Maitland house. And the Doctor says that gives her the ring back. It says they wanted you to have it. Everyone that you saved. I think it's very nice. But also, most of them have no fucking claim over what happened to that ring. Just the moped salesman does.
Yeah, just Doreen. Doreen went, thank you so much for returning my moped. And also, here's your ring back.
Thank you for returning my moped and saving my life. Here's the ring. It now has sentimental value for me, so I can give it back to you.
Yes.
Or does it not have sentimental value because Clara just burned away all the sentimental value in that leaf?
Mm, yeah, I think it doesn't matter.
Nah, but yeah, she puts the ring back on and then
skips away.
Yeah, the Doctor reveals the whole bit about you remind me of someone that died. Not the whole details of, I watched you die. I watched you be a Dalek and die. I watched you fall from the sky and turn into pudding.
I have watched you die now in the past and the future. And now this is the present. I don't know what's going to happen next. And I'm fucking scared. But now I have to protect you without protecting you because you don't seem like the type of person who wants to be protected.
Yeah, it's very I like the little seeds that they plant to like remind you this is like the overarching narrative without it bogging down the story too much.
Yeah.
Like it didn't get in the way of the episode. There was the beginning parts and there was like this little nugget at the end, but the story itself still got to breathe and live.
Hey, no, you never told me. What was your Zaki Profaki?
Oh, my Zaki Profaki. I'm sorry. I did forget to tell you that it was going to be the bazaar with all the different creatures in it.
Oh, well, come on, dude. Of course that was.
Yeah, they're not going to. I can't take a wild swing every time, especially when I know the answer is going to be 50 costumes of 50 boys in suits.
That's cheating. You give me hard questions all the time.
I mean, sometimes I give you easy ones.
I'm going to have to be better about picking my favorite moments then.
You also could have had a different favorite moment. You could have had the Matt Smith monologue. I just knew it was going to be the bazaar. Now, I do think the Matt Smith monologue might stick with you a little bit.
Nah.
Just I love it so much. It's so good.
Honestly, if I had to pick another favorite moment, mm-hmm. if I had to pick one, and it's something that is genuinely sticking with me, is just how sweet Clara was to little Mary behind the TARDIS.
Mary Galil.
And just being so, like, tender and nurturing.
Yeah.
Considering that she herself lost her mother at a young age, at an age that she presumes Mary to also be.
I mean, it seemed like she was at least in her late teens then. Like, she looked...
Well, even still.
Yeah, she looked mostly the same. She just had bangs, which is a real, like, 20-year-old decision.
But even still, like, being young and losing a parent.
Yeah.
And being young and not having any sort of, like...
It also gives you it's a good way of, like, making you understand why she got picked to be this children's caretaker. The Maitland. Why she continues to be their caretaker. Because we don't get a lot of moments where she really gets to showcase that. So they found a way to, like, do it without doing it. You know what I mean? Like, they don't.
Well, it just goes to show that she is not that type of person to only, like, the children she is nannying.
Yeah, she's just good with kids.
This is not a job for her. This is a vocation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's. I think it's a good character moment for her. I do really quite like that. And I don't think I would have guessed that is your favorite moment, but I do like that as a runner up to the bazaar for sure.
Like, of moments that will be stuck with me, it will be that. Yeah, for sure.
OK. Do you have any final thoughts you want to say about the episode here? Any?
I'm still angry about the mummy tongue. Other than that, no.
The mummy tongue. Nothing makes Cassie upset quite like some wet mummy tongue.
It was too pink. They couldn't have given him like a hard candy or something beforehand.
Well, you'll have some more mouths to judge, some more inside the mouths, because the Martians are mostly in suits. You just kind of get to see their mouths. So we'll get to find out about that on the next episode of Who Is My Doctor?
I swear to God, if those Martians look too healthy, I'm going to sue. Who is my doctor?
Who is indeed? Hello, I'm the wet mummy. Nom, nom, nom,
stop
nom.
It!
Nom, nom. Nom, nom, nom. With my wet mouth. They pulled out all my organs, but not my tongue and my saliva.
Yes! They could have given him, like, a grape Jolly Rancher, and that would have done the trick beautifully.
Just stuck some Laffy Taffy on him.
My God, charcoal toothpaste. Done!
Hello, Patreon. Thank you all for tuning in to another little preview. Hope you all enjoyed another episode of Two Idiots Talking While Their Cat Naps Nearby. And we appreciate you contributing to that cat's food so she doesn't scream at us the entire time we're recording. Special thanks, as always, to our Big Daddy Dalek patrons, Andrew Blewett, David Gansel, and Travis Aiken. Next week, we meet the most British Russians you've ever seen sail a submarine. So we'll see you next Tuesday, because your Tuesdays are now Whose Days.